Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia, this is CJSF 90.1 FM.
Welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show. My name is Michael Robert Kaditz. I am here this evening with Brandon Brownlee. And it's my turn to be the presenter. And so I decided to go out on a limb and present a theory of mine which is somewhat uncommon, if not first time. It's probably not the first time. It's no doubt going to be controversial, and I'm not afraid to be controversial. So bear with me, and I welcome critique, I welcome objections, and I would just love it. And Brandon, if you can poke holes in my theory, I'm sure there's some significant ones, but it might be fun. My controversial topic is laws, the laws of a country, of a state, and whether people have an obligation from an ethical standpoint or a principled standpoint to follow laws. So my conclusion is going to be what I'm arguing, and I will try and prove this using a logical argument, is that there is no ethical, nor is there a principled reason or anything like that. There's no intrinsic reason why people should obey laws. Obviously, highly controversial claim. I'm not claiming that there's no reason to obey laws. People might have their own reasons if they choose to obey laws for other reasons than principled reasons, perhaps practical reasons. They don't want to get thrown in jail, or maybe they feel they'd be safer if people obeyed laws. For example, if you come to a, let's take a simple traffic law, you come to a four-way intersection with, let's say, stop signs, and if no one obeyed stop signs, there's likely going to be some crashes and people are going to get hurt. So maybe some people would say, I obey traffic laws because that's what keeps us safe. Other people, of course, disobey traffic laws because other people are obeying them, which is an interesting phenomenon. So the fact that, let's say, most people obey traffic laws actually allows a few people to disobey them with relative safety because other people are going to be stopping at the stop sign. What I'm saying is there may be some advantage, perceived advantage, maybe actual advantage for people to obey laws, with the caveat that that actually enables a small minority of people to disobey laws. And that's a whole other topic, which I'll talk about some other time, that stable equilibrium of a percentage of people that obey laws and a percentage of people that don't obey laws. And there's some sort of stable equilibrium which allows the whole system to work. It wouldn't work if nobody was obeying the law. And it's not stable if everyone's obeying the law, because if everyone's obeying the law, then that gives the opportunity for a few people to not obey the law. So there's always going to be a few people that don't. And there's a stable equilibrium that develops with a small percentage of people disobeying laws, but the majority obeying them. And then we'll get into that on another show, because it's too far, you know, to the off topic. But I just want to give a little background on why people might obey laws. My argument being that there's no principled reason. There's no reason I'm going to argue. Controversially, I know there's no reason that for the sake of obeying laws, people should obey laws. There's nothing good or intrinsically valuable. It doesn't give you good character. It doesn't make you a moral person or a better person to be a law-abiding citizen. That's going to be my controversial argument. So a little more background definitions before I go to the actual argument. When I talk about principles and ethics, I'm speaking in a Kantian sense. So Kant, of course, in one of his formulations, talked about how a moral law would be generalizable, universalizable, right? You could generalize, and it would hold true if you were to generalize that proposed, you know, ethical imperative. So, for example, it wouldn't make any sense to generalize a claim like people should always steal. So that for obvious reasons, it wouldn't make sense. You'd have nothing but chaos in society. And so that couldn't possibly be, according to Kant, a moral imperative, because it wouldn't make sense if you generalize it to everybody all the time. On the other hand, if you said as your moral claim that you should never steal, nobody should ever steal, that's doable, right? People have their property and they don't take other people's property, and you have an orderly society, and there's nothing inherently contradictory or problematic about that. So that passes that you should never steal, you should never kill, you should never lie. Those types of claims seem to pass muster with respect to Kant's formulation that a moral imperative be generalizable. And, you know, obviously to many theorists, he took that too far, right? Because there's maybe cases where you need to lie. But, you know, and W.D. Ross understood that. And, of course, utilitarians will say that. But that's, again, too far off topic. The point is that when I talk about there's no principle, when I argue there's no principle, there's no ethical reason why people should obey laws, I'm speaking of ethics and principles in the terms of a generalizable principle, not like personal opinions, right? But is there a universalizable rule that we could make or propose that would be something to the effect of people should always obey the law? So I'm saying that doesn't make any sense, and I'll attempt to prove that. It makes no sense whatsoever. So that leads me to another background, I guess, definitional sort of thing before I get to my actual argument, which is the understanding that in this world there are many, many countries, and there's probably no two countries with identical political systems. Maybe there are some, maybe you could argue there are a few, but by and large we have a vast array of political systems. Even countries that are generally, let's say, democratic are structured differently. Canada and the United States have different forms of government. They're not identical. Countries that we would classify as non-democratic also have many different forms of government. There's countries that are maybe best characterized as theocracies, perhaps Iran, for example. Autocratic countries like maybe Turkey, Russia, probably. And there are some countries that are outright dictatorships. A dictatorship is not the same thing as an autocracy. With that, again, we don't want to get in. I'm not going to get into all the nuances of types of governments, but suffice it to say, there are theocracies, autocracies, republics, monarchies, many, many types of governments. So having said that, I'm also going to claim that laws are creations of governments. Certainly that's what Hobbes said. So just a brief touch on Hobbes. So of course, Thomas Hobbes argued that in a state of nature, there are no laws, there are no rules, there's no morality. It's a state of war of all against all. Everyone's out for his or her. Hobbes probably didn't say her, but I don't feel right about saying his to cover everybody, right? And indeed, according to Hobbes and the social contract theorists, other than Hobbes, which there are many, laws are created by people as a way of creating a livable, rational society. which constrains people, restrains people from fighting each other all the time. And I think Hobbes argued that that's the authority for it. That's a justification for laws. That laws are the strategy by which people will live in a decent lives in a reasonable, you know, livable, rational society as opposed to a state of constant war.
Yeah, if you know what's good for you, you'll follow these laws.
But notably and importantly, I think Hobbes and the other social contract theorists, if not explicitly, at least by implication, we're suggesting that there is no universal morality. It's only the laws that are created. The laws are constructed. So morality, in a sense, is constructed, right? So what people, what is moral is constructed. What is moral is that which is constructed by people. But it's a different type of morality than, let's say, like a God-given morality or a moral realism where there's like morals which are like as real as a rock or something. Right. And that's what Hobbes and the social contract theorists denied, or by, at least by implication, were negating or denying existed. And that's why we need to construct laws. And of course, according to Hobbes, the ideal society to be constructed would be one with a Leviathan, right? An autocratic leader of some sort, or perhaps not a tyrannical, maybe, but certainly an autocratic leader, one which was agreed upon by the people, and the people agreed to having that form of government because that is what they traded away a certain amount of freedom in return for the security and stability and civility of a society. So the point is that the people, at least the theoretical people that lived in the theoretical society that Thomas Hobbes advocated, would believe that that's the best form of government, not democracy, but autocracy was the best form of government for rational reasons. So in the real world today, we have, again, many forms of government, and I'm suggesting that many people don't agree with perhaps what, Brandon, what you and I might say, which is that democracy is the best form of government. Many people believe that their theocracy or their autocratic state has the best form of government. In countries like Hungary and Turkey, the leaders who are quite autocratic, really, in their powers, are supported, arguably, by a vast majority of people in those countries, and they've been elected because those countries are electoral democracies. In other words, they have elections, and the leaders are elected. However, they are autocratic because they have so much power over the judiciary, power over the press, and so. My point here, this is one of the premises of my argument that I'm building, is that there is vast disagreement and differences of opinion the world over about what type of government is the best type of government. And I would further suggest that many people believe that other types of government are not only inferior but illegitimate. So I think that there's many people in North America, let's say Canada, the United States, who would argue that Putin is not a legitimate leader of Russia because the elections are rigged. There's not actually free elections. They have elections, but they're not free and fair elections. The elections are rigged. Any serious opposition is killed or put in jail. So I think that if we travel the world over, we would find many opinions about the legitimacy or illegitimacy of other types of government, or even one's own government. So there are people in Russia, perhaps this minority, who believe that Putin's illegitimate. My claim here is that there's no objective way to determine which country or which form of government is legitimate. It's relativism, right? It's depending on who you are, what country you're in, what your beliefs are, what your values are, you might believe that one form of government or another, one leader or another is legitimate or not. Even in the United States, some people think that Biden's not legitimate because he stole the election from Trump. I'm not taking sides. I'm not advocating for any particular form of government or claiming that anyone's right or wrong. I'm just saying that there's wide and vast disagreement around the world. Therefore, there's no way, I argue, to find an objective truth. Compare that to like Kantian morality. Of course, the claim in ethics is that there are objective truths. Anyone who's taken an ethics course and stumbled, as I did at the beginning of the course, making claims about ethical relativism, I think most of us, if we want to pass the class, have to at least, at least pretend to admit that there are objective truths, and some people are just wrong, right? Like, it's just wrong to kill. It's just wrong to steal. It's wrong to do harm without a good reason for it. And the idea that people make up their own morality, or cultures make up their own morality, that type of, you know, either ethical relativism or, you know, individual moral relativism is really antithetical to ethics. It's not ethics. Mm. You can't have ethics if it's just personal opinions. I mean, the great ethical theorists came up with structures which pointed to objective criteria that were universalizable in order to establish that morality is distinct from personal opinion, or even distinct from the practices of a particular culture. Across the board, killing, you know, without a good reason, and there could be some variation on what people think is a good reason, but killing is wrong, stealing is wrong, lying is wrong, being malevolent is wrong, no matter whether people recognize it or not. It's not a matter of opinion. If your opinion is that killing is just fine, that doesn't make it just fine. It just means you're wrong about that. So that's, I think, one of the underlying principles of ethics.
If it's just opinions, then there doesn't seem to be any way to navigate the conversation. It's just kind of everyone putting whatever they want on the table. And how do you, like, it's one thing to have a big discussion where everyone puts what they think on the table. It's an entirely separate thing to evaluate and reason through and ask, you know, which claims or which opinions should we accept or which should we reject. Once you do that, you're actually doing ethical reasoning and not just, chiming the moral intuitions.
But how can we apply this principle that we've just described to countries and systems of government? Like, I don't know any criteria by which we could say that, like, a democratic republic is correct and an autocracy is wrong, especially since some of our great classical philosophers argued in favor of non-democratic forms of government. And Plato, of course, did the same. He suggested that democracies, although attractive and the embroidery of many colors is very, you know, beautiful, democracies will not last, and they're not practical and they're chaotic. And who should rule are not elected representatives, but they are philosopher kings. I think that we would be hard-pressed to claim, as we might be able to claim legitimately with murder and stealing and lying, we'd be hard-pressed to find some criteria for claiming there's some objectively good form of government and some objectively bad form of government. So it seems like with respect to forms of government and countries and political systems, first of all, there's so many of them. There's so many variation and flavors. How could you even pick one out and say that was the right one? It just seems completely implausible to apply that standard of universalizability or, you know, be able to generalize as to which form of government is correct and which is incorrect. Another premise of my argument is that laws are a product of the country. So you have a political state, and laws are creations of that state. I'm agreeing with Hobbes, right? Social contract. People get together, they form a country, they form a state, and the state passes laws. So laws are derived from, are products of, created by the countries, the states, the political systems, the very things that I am arguing in my previous premise. We cannot determine which of those systems are legitimate or which are illegitimate. So my next premise is going to be that we should not follow the laws of illegitimate governments. That should be accepted by most people. Should you follow Hitler's laws if you were living in Nazi Germany? Should you follow the laws of Nazi Germany? Does a person living in Nazi Germany have some kind of ethical obligation to follow the law? I think you might argue that perhaps they had an ethical obligation to rebel and not to follow the laws of such a regime. I suspect that many North Americans, Canadians, Americans might support rebels or in Russia who are fighting to overthrow Putin and disobey laws in doing so. Now, I know there's a lot of supporters of Russia, probably Trump and MAGA Republicans and so on. It seems like they're pretty well aligned with Russia, but there's certainly a large number of people in the United States and probably in Canada who would think that the good guys in Russia are the ones that are disobeying the laws. The resistance movement in Russia and other oppressive countries, maybe the resistance movement in Iran, those resistance movements in countries that we, in our opinions, would consider to be oppressive or illegitimate, suddenly the disobeyers of laws in those countries become the good guys. So it seems that whether laws should be obeyed or disobeyed depends on whether we think that governments are legitimate or illegitimate, oppressive or non-oppressive.
That seems to be one reason you can kind of derive the legitimacy or illegitimacy of a law from its source, that is, its government. There might be legitimate states that issue illegitimate laws, but you wouldn't be able to cite the state for their illegitimacy. But this is, if you can cite, or if you can find an illegitimate government, it seems as though you can trace that out as a illegitimate laws as a consequence.
What I'm arguing doesn't exist is some general ethical principle that people should obey laws. So the question is, I mean, there can be exceptions. I mean, you could have a principle that people should obey laws unless they are illegitimate or unless they're immoral, like, say, laws around slavery. But then you have people picking and choosing which laws in their opinion are immoral or which are not immoral. Supposing you believe generally that you're an upstanding person in society and that's why you obey laws. So this is what I'm getting at. This is what I'm suggesting is mistaken. So I'm going to speak for myself. Let's say I'm a person that identifies as someone who obeys the law, except maybe if I have some sort of particular objection to what I think is an illegitimate law. Like maybe I think that maybe I'm a woman, or I have a woman in my life who needs an abortion and I think she's entitled to an abortion, and now she lives in Texas or Florida. Maybe I think that the law that's preventing her from getting an abortion is illegitimate, and so I'm going to try and work around it and find a way to get her an abortion, right? So maybe I could make that an exception to my otherwise, you know, general principle that I am a person that obeys laws. But does that really hold? Like if you were in Nazi Germany, would you feel an obligation to obey laws except for ones that you thought were illegitimate? Or might you say, I simply have no obligation to this state, this corrupt authoritarian genocidal state in the sense of, the country of Germany, the Third Reich controlled by Hitler. I have no obligations whatsoever to obey the laws here. Or would you have an obligation like to obey certain laws and not others? It just seems problematic to me. It seems like, I think there are people who would say that there are countries in the world that I find so objectionable and so illegitimate that I really owe nothing. I owe nothing to the laws of that country, and whether I obey the laws of that country completely depends on whether I think I'm going to get caught or not or thrown in jail or something. But I really have no sense of allegiance or obligation to follow the laws of an illegitimate system. I think that I would feel that way. And I think I hypothesize that a lot of people would feel that way in a country like Germany or perhaps in Putin's Russia. They would have no sense of responsibility to obey the laws merely because they were the laws, because they come from an illegitimate source.
Given such extreme examples, and that there might be a distinction between, as we've, you know, been distinguishing between states and laws, there is the wonder whether there might be two different scenarios. I might acknowledge a law as being illegitimate. I might acknowledge a state as being illegitimate. Both of them cash out into this law that is preventing me from doing the thing that I feel I need to do or that I want to do. Both of them cash out to, I am justified in not acknowledging that law and going against it. And yeah, I mean, personally, I would feel like, I mean, like if I think about the subjective experience of a person being subjected to an illegitimate state, and this goes, I mean, this goes back to what Hobbes says a little bit too. He says that if a person, the only point at which a person is justified in rebelling against the sovereign is if they come for your life, you know, because for Hobbes it's about rational self-interest. So as soon as they violate the very thing that they're trying to secure, you are justified in rebelling against the state. Now, that's a fragmented moment for that one individual. It doesn't shatter the whole edifice. But the point that I'm going for here is that there are moments when a subject may feel that there is some kind of illegitimacy, and the experience of that illegitimacy is experienced as not so much, okay, I don't feel like I have an obligation. It's that my government is supposed to be in the service of me, and it is not servicing me anymore. The agreement that we had has been severed. I was a part of the state, and now I am no longer a part of the state because the state no longer recognizes me as a legitimate subject because it is extrajudicially dealing with me.
Right. And imagine you were one of the citizens in Thomas Hobbes, you know, hypothetical state controlled by the Leviathan. And it's not completely hypothetical because there are countries that are quite similar. But what's kind of special about the Leviathan is that the people have agreed, if not unanimously, they've by and large agreed to trade away some of their personal liberties and powers for the sake of security. And I suggest that there are many people in countries that we in the West would consider to be authoritarian, oppressive countries who are quite satisfied with having a strong man leader because of the security they think they get from that leader. We can't make a general rule that would apply to everybody, certainly when not when our own Western philosophers have argued for, you know, in favor of dictatorial or autocratic systems. You're listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show. I'm Michael Robert Caitis. I'm here with Brandon Brownlee. My thesis is that there is no ethical or principled obligation for anyone to obey laws in the world. There are other reasons, perhaps, but not ethical and not some related principled intrinsic reason that laws should be obeyed or that laws are good or that one is a better person by being a law-abiding citizen. So I'm denying that. I'm building on that argument. I've been talking a lot about how it would be very difficult to pin down what laws from what passed by which governments and which countries and which types of political systems are legitimate versus which are not legitimate. And yet I'm also claiming that most people or many people would agree that they need not follow laws that are either themselves illegitimate or that are passed by illegitimate governments. I also want to suggest that it would be almost an impossible task to separate out which laws passed by illegitimate governments are themselves legitimate. And I know that that could be one objection to my theory. And you touched on, kind of hinted at this, Brandon, you know, one might say, well, it doesn't so much matter what, you know, form of government the country has. Laws themselves can either be legitimate or illegitimate. But My contention is that would be very difficult to sort out because